It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
And you can call us at 247-7282, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, let's talk about what I want to call contingency provisions, mm-hmm. or, you know, what if provisions that we include in last wills and testament, mm-hmm. and also, of course, our trust agreements. Also, to some degree, in the power of attorney, those ancillary documents, health care power of attorney. You know, the devil is in these contingencies, Ben, mm-hmm. and we get the question all the time, you know, can I write my own will? Yes, you can in North Carolina. There's certain requirements, but generally a holographic will, if you meet those requirements, can be admitted to probate. Can I download a will from the internet, you know, some form,
sure.
and fill it in? And again, if you do it with proper execution provisions relative to two witnesses and maybe under notary, then again, that will might be an enforceable will. But what happens with these kinds of documents is that the contingencies, Ben, don't get addressed, the
right.
but-fors.
Right.
And so let's talk about that. Right out of the gate, one of the most important ones is, you know, well, what happens if your beneficiary is not living?
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday I had a nice lady in. She has a very sick brother. Unfortunately, she's come into town to be with him, to take care of him. He, of course, is coming in, I think, the end of this week, because we need to move very promptly on his file. And I talked to him on the telephone while she was in the office, because he was very sick. And he wants everything to go to his sister, mm-hmm. which wasn't very mm-hmm. surprising. He's not married, doesn't have children. And then the question comes, well, you know, John, what happens if your sister's not living?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, there was this pregnant pause, okay?
Yes. Yeah.
Because he had not really thought about that. They had not thought about that. Well, does the sister have children? If the sister has children, then we could add the famous words per stirpes and let the assets pass to, you know, his
right.
sister's children, who would be his niece and nephews. And he then ended up deciding a particular person that he wanted to be the, you know, that, you know, what if
mm-hmm.
Provision. So we have to be very careful in meticulous, if you will, in asking these kinds of questions and developing a document that is thorough and mm-hmm. complete and addresses these contingent provisions. For instance, folks will have three children, elderly mm-hmm. folks, let's say. They'll have three children. These children are in their 30s and 40s. They want everything to go a third, a third, and a third. But what if one of those children is not living?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, during the interviews that Wes and I handle, we ask that question. Well, you have the three children. Now, how many children does John have and Mary and Sue? And most of the time, they'll say they have a child,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Right.
But sometimes they'll say, oh, no, Sue doesn't have any children. She's mm-hmm. 45 years old. I don't think Sue is ever going to have a child.
Mm-hmm.
She and her husband, you know, travel the world, and they just they did not have children, and they're not interested in adopting a child. Well, that's a red flag
yeah.
to a good lawyer.
Right.
Because what if something happens to Sue? Where mm-hmm. does her then one-third go? So the document needs to address that her one-third would lapse and go to the other two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other two had children. So theirs can go in the per stirpes distribution, meaning on to their children.
Mm-hmm.
But these are kind of the what-if questions that need to be talked about.
I have a per stirpes question for you then, too.
Sure.
Does that mean that it goes to that through the estate of that person to the children, or does it then it can go directly to the children?
Yeah, the per stirpes is going to be through lineal descent. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're talking about it would pass, I guess your question is through the estate, mm-hmm. but
well,
it would not be controlled, let's say, by the deceased grandchild's, you know, will so
right.
much. It would be, okay, I leave, you know, these assets per stirpes, a third, a third, a third. One child dies, has two children.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's going to pass to those two children that share equally.
Mm-hmm.
If one of those two children died and doesn't have a child, it's going to
right.
pass to the survivor.
Gotcha.
If one of those two children, I guess we're down to grandchildren,
yes, right.
died and had that great-grandchild, then it would pass on down to the great. So it's assurance that it stays through lineal descent in an mm-hmm. equal distribution. I guess that's a good way to say it.
Right.
But it wouldn't pass to the estate of the
right.
deceased parent,
right.
I think was your question.
Yeah, that's it.
A third, a third, and a third, and one of the children is not living,
mm-hmm.
then immediately the third goes to the living child, the third to the other living child, and then the last third is split at that time,
mm-hmm. okay.
right.
50-50
right.
to those two children.
It's an okay. assurance mm-hmm. that it stays through lineal descent, mm-hmm. and the person who's put that in their will, the per stirpes, is controlling that. It's not controlled by someone else's will down
right.
the line.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, Cecil, I would say that, you know, the biggest area, and let me back up just a little bit. You know, I'm the guy who goes to court and does the litigation stuff
right.
and all this
right.
this related to
state. So when there's not a contingency, that's what
yeah,
they call you
so
in.
So exactly. over the years, Cecil certainly deals with the what I call the office practice more than mm-hmm. I have, but I've done hundreds of them, if not thousands. He's done 10 times as many, or if not more. You know, of sitting down with the family, you know, going through the assets, going through the family, talking about the estate plan, you know, those type things. And so I've dealt with it a whole lot. And I would say that the, you know, the area, Ben, where folks say, well, I didn't think about that,
mm-hmm.
is always this area we're talking about.
Right.
It's always that area of, you know, what happens if this person's not living. Most people, when they come in and sit down with Mr. Lawyer and talk about their will or trust or whatever, they know where they want their assets to go based on the current circumstance.
Correct.
They mm-hmm. know that they want the estate to pass,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they were to die today, this way. But it would not be, in my opinion, good representation of a client to not take care of this topic, contingencies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're sitting down, taking the time to think through this, you know, formally putting these documents together. Mm-hmm. It needs to be, you know, you need to spend the time to take care of the contingencies as well. Now, I would say this, though. We see wills all the time that are done elsewhere, out of state, you know, whatever, online,
right.
whatever. There's just one executor named. That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
There's just no attention to what happens if the person dies before. There's one trustee. So I can't remember. I don't think that I've ever, Cecil hasn't mm-hmm. probably either ever done an estate plan for someone with one executor.
Mm-hmm.
We always have a fallback.
Correct.
We always kind of make the client.
Right.
Say, okay, well, we know it's your spouse who's the executor, for example. What happens if your spouse isn't living? Who's next? Well, in most cases, it's going to be one of the children.
Mm-hmm.
But every, you know, families are different. Sometimes
yeah,
there's
right.
not that child that we trust. Sometimes there's no children. Sometimes you got to look to the family friend. But in many cases, I give my clients, if they just seem like they can't figure it out as we're sitting there at the table discussing it, I'll give them a homework sheet of do 1, 2, 3, 4, these issues, we need to get these answered. Give it some thought. And get back to me on this so we can complete your documents. And in many cases, that homework sheet includes what happens if this person predeceases. Who do you want to be your second executor,
right.
second power of attorney, second healthcare power of attorney, those kind of things. So, again, you know, just the way we do it, and I think that, you know, most attorneys are going to really require this thought process to talk about these contingencies. What
mm-hmm.
happens if if someone passes away, how are we dealing with that in your document?
Okay. And if you have questions, and I'm sure you have many, give us a call at 247-7282. Again, 247-7282, and we'll have more to come in a moment on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. To listen to past shows, go to harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We're talking about contingencies in your estate.
We are. And I think Wes said a good phrase there. You know, folks look at this planning and they look at today, exactly where we are today. Lawyers, good lawyers, look at it. How does this document talk, walk 10 years from now, 15 years from now? Every time we do a document, Ben, when we do a last will and testament, we have to know when that client walks out the door with a, with that signed document, that very likely could be truly the last will and testament.
That's the way to think of it.
That's the way to think of it.
That's right.
And it is not going, and when clients are walking out the door, they many times are going to live quite a while, let's hope.
Right.
Okay. So the document has got to address these, well, what if clauses. And one of the next ones that I was going to refer was the contingent executor. Again, we get those pregnant pauses. Everyone comes in and says, well, I want Mary Sue. Mary Sue's here with me today. She's going to be my executor. Well, what if there is no Mary Sue? Okay.
Right.
So we've got to have alternates in that area. Now, another one that is common, Ben, is the issue of the asset itself. Folks will make a decision that they want their house to go to a particular child, let's say, or they want a certain asset. Sometimes clients will even try to talk about, you know, a CD or a bank or a, you know, a particular stock account or something that
or a
they
vehicle.
Have.
Yeah.
Both. Or vehicle, anything like that. Well, you know, 10 years from now, we might not have that vehicle. We might not have that CD at that particular bank, and certainly the bank's name's going to have changed.
Yes.
All right. We might not have that particular piece of property, that particular condominium. We may have traded it and gotten a different one, or may not own it at all. So, when clients start talking to us about these kinds of specifics, we have to be very careful in guiding the client about those kinds of things because they may not exist at the time that the will is actually becomes, you know, a full force effect. In other words, when there's been a death.
Right.
Be careful about putting, it's kind of the beauty of the law, the fascination of the law. You know, in one area, we want you to be very specific. Like these contingent beneficiaries, contingent executors, and yet now here's an area where we prefer that you be more general. Okay.
Right.
If there is a particular need for a child to own a home, I mean, we have every walk of life, every fact and circumstance. Our duty as a lawyer is to listen very carefully to what the goals and objectives of the client happen to be and apply those goals and objectives to the proper documentation. That is our duty as a lawyer and to address these contingencies. However, Ben, why is it that they say, because they're not going to say whatever house I own. They're going to say, you know, my house on Lord Granville Drive. I want that now to go to Mary Sue. Now, John can have everything else is 50-50. Well, there needs to be a question. Well, why? Well, Mary Sue doesn't really have a home. John particularly does. Mary Sue wants to live here. John doesn't. He's all settled in Florida, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe the terminology in the will needs to be, you know, whatever home I happen to own at the time of my death, not just Lord Granville, because it might not be Lord Granville.
Yes,
it might be Carriage Crossing. It might be whatever. You know, Brandywine Bay. It could be some other place. So the questions that the lawyer asks are very important. there's usually a purpose for them. And again, what we're doing in asking those questions is projecting out what is really behind a request from a client that their home mm-hmm. go to a particular child or grandchild or whatever the case might be. A lot of times they will say, you mentioned vehicle. Mm-hmm. A lot of grandmamas and granddaddies want their vehicle to go to their grandson or their granddaughter.
Right, right. Okay. Who probably doesn't want it.
Well, I don't know about that now. Okay. But the point is that, any vehicle that I happen to own,
mm-hmm.
not, you know, the right. 2015, you know, Honda Accord, because
mm-hmm.
we might not have the Honda Accord, but we probably will have a vehicle, and whatever vehicle we happen to own, we want to go to our granddaughter. Okay. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
You know, Ben, then the question for the listeners should be, I think, all right, so what happens, for example, if we don't have that successor named?
Right.
And back to the contingencies here. What if we don't have that trustee named? What if our first one dies and then we don't have a second? What if we don't in our will put down who we want the guardian to be of our children under 18 years of age? What happens? Well, the clerk of court then decides.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of setting yourself up for potentially a dispute, because, I mean, especially when we're talking about minor children, the mm-hmm. guardianship provision is very important to include, you know, in any will, you know, when there's minor children involved. Because in the event you don't have that, then there's no preference. There's no parents are not living anymore. Then
right.
you've got a grandparent dispute. I mean, who's going to be the guardian of these children? In the event that you do have that language in the will,
mm-hmm.
then the statute indicates that the clerk basically doesn't have to do that, but has to. That's a very strong, there's a very strong preference
mm-hmm.
toward following that.
Right.
So really, rule of thumb with regard to that is if you fail to include that in your document, guardianship, trustee, executor, as far as your successor, your second or third, and the other one, the previous has passed, then the clerk is going to have a determination to make as to who is going to serve in that role. Now, there are guidelines in the statutes, those type things. Also, in the event that the asset is mm-hmm. not addressed in the what happens? Well, if the Honda Accord is gone, then it's gone. But in the event there's something that's not addressed in the will at all,
right.
intestacy. That mm-hmm. means the state of North Carolina's statutory scheme comes into play, even though you have a will.
Mm-hmm.
to address whatever that issue is. Like, for example, if you don't have a residuary clause that captures everything,
mm-hmm.
got a case like that right now. I mean, we're in court over this. So, you know, the twists and turns and mistakes in wills and not thinking through these things, you know, sometimes they come to the surface after the person has died because there was a failure to think through
right.
these things at the time of execution.
It can be a lot of assets there, that a 401k from a job from 40 years ago. And, you know,
could be
ago.
If there's not a beneficiary designation, sure.
Yeah, yeah, or any number of piece of land they didn't know.
Right, right.
So it is, you can see the importance of this. And again, if you want to get in touch with the folks at Harvell and Collins, then you want to make sure that you make that appointment and go through all that, because they'll address these contingencies. If you want to give us a call, we still have time for your question too at 247-7282 as we continue with Let's Talk the Legal. And we're back with Cecil and Wes from Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, talking about contingencies, finishing up there.
One more thing, Ben, that we get asked about a lot is the changes in the last name of the daughters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there'll be Mary Jones, and then she marries, and she becomes, you know, Mary Willis, and then she goes through a divorce and becomes Mary Jones again. Do mm-hmm. I need to change the names back and forth? And the answer to that question is no, and I would not be overly concerned about the names in terms of last names, and also even sometimes we see a few spelling errors mm-hmm. with names. The point here is, Ben, that these children are in relationship to the testator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the testator has two children. One is named Mary, one is named John.
Mm-hmm.
Whether her last name at the time happens to be Willis or Jones or Smith is not critically important, because we clearly know that the intent of the testator is that they are speaking about their daughter.
Right.
We just
right.
need to be able to identify. Mm-hmm. Now, if we have, for example, John Smith Jr. as a beneficiary, but mm-hmm. or John Smith III,
mm-hmm.
well, we don't need to say John Smith.
Yes, that's
because
right.
Because then they might have a little argument about who we're talking about.
That's correct.
But
yeah.
if there's just this one, you know, person whose last name changed because of marriage, and we can identify them, then that's really not an issue.
Hmm. Correct.
Yes, and a lot of people I know happens with my wife. She goes by her middle name, so that always comes up that way too.
And in the last minute of the program, Ben, anyone who is married
mm-hmm.
in a second or third marriage needs to consult with a lawyer
right.
today.
Yes,
okay?
That's right. Yeah.
Because the law in the state of North Carolina has materially changed as to the rights of a spouse known as the elective share.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are in a second or third marriage, then you need to know that your spouse has a right to certain percentages in your estate.
Mm-hmm.
So many folks believe that in second and third marriages, they believe that, well, I did my will, I've left everything to my children.
Mm-hmm.
My wonderful wife, we've been married now for 10 years, 15 years, but she's left everything to her children. And that's what we agreed when we got married, and we've been now together for 17 years, whatever the case might be. And no one is going to have anything to say contrary to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yes.
Okay.
Happens all the time.
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
So if you are in a second or third, we don't have to worry about that in people who've been married,
mm-hmm.
you know, the career marriages, if you will, Ben,
right.
because
right.
clearly they have the collective children.
Mm-hmm.
Mom and dad been married for 56 years, 70 years, and they have two children.
Mm-hmm.
So these issues don't evolve. They evolve in the files where we're in the second or third or fourth marriages with children from prior marriages.
All right. So, again, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins and make sure that you are taking care of that business. And you can call and make that appointment. You can go online, too, and look at the past shows or listen to them. And give them a call, again, at 252-727-2560 at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.